Okay, Liz, here's some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs, you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors.
Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood.
Sarah, you know what question I keep getting?
What?
Am I getting an extra mini fridge when I go back in Puerto Rico? Everyone thinks I need to get that extra mini fridge.
Well, everyone is right. Yeah. I 100% agree.
Goals.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Liz Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner, Sarah.
That's me, Sarah Fain. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
And today, Sarah, is our summer listener questions episode.
Yay! Can't believe it's summer already.
It's well into summer. It's the middle of summer. I know. I can't believe it either.
No.
Our summer has gone very fast. Fast and furious.
And frankly, it can't go fast enough. I am looking forward to the fall.
I am too. All right. Shall we dive in?
Yes. Let's do it.
Okay. This first question comes from Caitlin. She says, hi, I always see music by XYZ in the opening credits of shows, and I've always been curious on what exactly this means. Is it the person who picks the playlist of songs, or is it the composer of background sounds like footsteps, doorbells, traffic, etc.? Or is it original score and mood music? Is it true that during, quote, party scenes, there's never actually any music playing during shooting? I'm so interested about all these music slash sound aspects and how it comes together. Well, those are actually different elements.
Yes. No, it's a big, vast area.
Yes. It's a huge, putting together the sound is a huge part of making television. The sound part, like footsteps and doorbells, that's called Foley. And it's done by a group who come in after it's cut and add to whatever the production sound is.
And they do that in the mix. Like at the very, very end, everybody comes together for a sound mix, and that's where all of these various elements come together. But when you see music by, that's usually the composer, who's the person who writes the original music for the show.
Yes, the score.
Then there are music supervisors who do like the needle drops, which is find the songs that have already been written to put in the show over scenes.
Yes, and they're responsible for clearing those, paying, you know, whatever you have to pay to use them. A lot of times they have to find sort of, if you say, well, I want a song like this, then they find a cheaper version of something that is similar, but more affordable to, say, a Coldplay song. And then Sarah, she asked a question, is it true that there usually is not music playing at parties when people are dancing, etc.? That can go either way. It's true that a lot of times you don't want to have music because you don't know if it's what you're going to decide on in the final version of the show. So you don't want everyone to be moving exactly to a certain beat and then you can't change the song. But other times they do play some sort of music just so people sort of have something to react to, but it tends to be a little more generic.
But then they'll sort of turn it off once the actors start talking and people have to remember that beat in their heads and keep dancing to it.
That's
and
right.
And in the pilot of Fantasy Island, there's actually a scene with Bellamy Young where she's sort of doing a dance slash waltz while she eats all these wonderful foods. And we played Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy while she was doing it. So she had something to move to. But then we aren't actually using that in the show, which complicates things because she said, like, thank you, thank you, and had all these kind of great sounds during the scene that we're now going to have to recreate.
Yes.
Using ADR and using Foley and all of these things to get footsteps and the actual room sounds, since we can't use what we shot with the music playing. So there are so many layers to how it's done and how it all comes yes. together. And then there's loop group, Liz.
Yes, loop group. Loop group add the sort of lines and other sounds. Or if you're at a party and you want murmuring or a restaurant, the loop group does all of that. Our friend Marie Brazil has a loop group.
Yes, and we work with her very often. She's great.
Yes. So there's a lot to the sound question and the music question. And it's just it's a process.
Okay, and then Connie Ann asks, which model of TV producing do we prefer? Straight to series or shoot the pilot and see what happens? Boy, that's a loaded question right now, Connie Ann.
Yes, we're now, look, everyone's dream is to get a straight to series order because doing a pilot and then waiting to hear if it's picked up is so hard,
it's
so anxiety
awful.
Producing. And to get a straight to series order is the dream. But, you know, we have that with Fantasy Island, and it does have disadvantages. The main one, really the only one, but it's a big one, being that you are doing the pilot, the first episode of a show, when you're really still finding the voice, the sound, the look, all of it, at the same time that you're doing the rest of the season. And that is really tough. And that's where we are right now, in the thick of that.
Yeah. And the schedule is tough. And on this one, it's particularly tough just because our air date is so close to our pickup date.
Yes.
If we had more time, it really would be a different conversation. It would be much, 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 and like 1,000, add 1,000 more muches and easier.
Yes.
But when the schedule is tight, that makes it much harder. And then you're like, why didn't they do a pilot? I could have handled 6 months of anxiety waiting.
But if we had to choose, I would choose straight to series every time.
Yeah, that's true.
Vanessa asks, if we're using different directors on Fantasy Island for different storylines, the way the original Fantasy Island did, she said, or does that just introduce more headaches? We're using just a director per episode. So if there are two storylines in that episode, the director directs both storylines. So we're not doing it that way. But we are using different directors for most episodes, although we're lucky because a couple of our directors are doing more than one episode, which is always nice.
Yes. And we also are not doing what they did on the original and having different writers for different storylines. They almost shot things, I think, totally separately with different writers and different directors and then just stuck them together. I think we have one episode where we have different writers for the A story and the B story, episode 6.
Right.
But that just sort of worked out that way.
Patty asked, did you come up with the idea of a Fantasy Island remake or was it pitched to you? Sarah, it's interesting to me how many questions we're getting about Fantasy Island.
I love it.
Interest in Fantasy Island. It's almost like our Fantasy Island listener questions episode.
Yay.
It was pitched to us, the idea of doing it. Sony Gemstone, a division of Sony, wanted to remake Fantasy Island, and they knew Fox wanted to do it. And so they were looking for someone to bring it to life. And as soon as we heard about it, we were like, we're in, because we're huge fans.
And it's nice because we keep hearing, we've been trying to do this for years and never found the way to make it work. And we're like, well, fantastic. We figured out how to make it work. This is very exciting.
Hopefully you all agree.
Yes.
That we made it work.
But we really think it works. We're really excited about this show. Oh, and then Catherine asked Liz about the books that we have written together. She said, what inspired that idea and how was that experience? Would you do it again?
Yes, we wrote two books together, oh gosh, a while ago now, two young adult books about four friends who decided that when they graduated high school, they wanted to take a gap year, and they all went off and had a different adventure. It was funny because we had wanted to write books and we wanted to do it together because it just made sense. And Sarah, we knew that like we couldn't actually write together like paragraphs.
Yeah.
So that's why we came up with this idea of having four characters having different storylines so that we could each write two of the characters.
Yeah. So then we kind of did the outline together and wove the four stories together in outline form. And then you wrote the prose for two of the characters, and I wrote the prose for two of the characters, and then it all wove together into the two books. And we should say the books are called Bass Ackwards and Belly Up and Foot Free and Fancy Loose.
Yes.
They're still floating around out there, I think. We loved them.
Oh, yes. We love them. The funny thing is we were working on The Shield at the time, and it was a very intense job, and we were so exhausted that, like, I would read things I'd written and think you had written them, and you would read things you had written and think I had written them, because we were so out of our minds with exhaustion that we would forget what we'd written.
It's good to remember that, like, this level of exhaustion that we're feeling now is something we've felt actually throughout our careers.
It's That's true. Unique. It's like having a baby. You forget about the pain once it's done.
Exactly. And then would we do it again? I don't know. I mean, I think if we did something other than TV, we really want to do fiction podcasts.
Yeah.
So I think probably we would do that together.
Yes.
If we're not doing TV, but we both have books separately that we want to write. We just don't have time to write them.
I know. I keep saying we need to nag each other into submission on that.
I know.
It, but it's hard.
Literally yesterday, Liz goes, you know, when you get settled in Ojai, you really should write a book.
Yeah.
I was like, no kidding. I've only been trying to do that for like 10 years.
Coming up, we'll answer a question about how we got our first staff position. But first, this break.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, Sarah, we're back with a question from Brooke. She says, I'd love to hear the more detailed story of how you got to your first staff position. I'm mainly wondering what you did outside of that between moving to LA and getting staff, since networking and writing on spec doesn't pay the bills.
Ain't that the truth?
Yes, it is. So we moved out here together. And Sarah, I was writing young adult books and doing work for the company that made Sweet Valley High.
Yes. And I was working as Lauren Holly's second assistant, which was basically an office job. And I also, well, ultimately, really, honestly, for us to do the work that we needed to do to get staffed, I ended up quitting that job so we could write specs. And my grandmother, bless her, had left me some money. So I lived off that. And you weren't making enough off the books either.
No.
So you borrowed money. I mean, you made
nothing.
Yes, you borrowed money from Gretchen.
Yep.
And, you know, we were very lucky that we had people who essentially helped support us. I mean, we were also working our asses off, but who helped support us through that kind of seminal year.
Yes. And my parents definitely also pitched in. Yes. So we definitely have that place of privilege to be able to focus that time. But we were living close to the bone. I mean, it was.
Oh, my God.
It was a lean time. We say this, you know, and I don't know if we've talked about this lately, but we did nothing at that time in our life unless we felt it would lead to a writing job. I mean, it was a single-minded obsession. And I think, you know, that's what you have to have.
Yeah. And We also didn't have any sort of
knowledge of how hard it was.
Oh, yeah, we definitely not. But I was going to say that we didn't have any, like, I feel like people now want to tell their own story and express their own thing and have their own voice and feel their own unique vision come into being. We were just like, we want whatever the grunt work is, we'll do it. Like, you know, we did a Saturday morning show. We did, like, we were just very nose to the grindstone, practical, had no sense of our own sort of artistic voice at all. We were just like,
we just wanted to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that ultimately it paid off.
Yes, it did. And also we have to say our friend Todd Shulkin, who is a manager now, was an agent at the time. And he helped us get our first agent, which helped, you know, set up all of these meetings and ultimately led to us getting our first freelance. There's a lot of luck involved.
Yes, there is.
And hard work. Yes.
Both.
Yes. Okay. Jennifer says, in Sarah's move to Ojai, it seems she's really committing to a life on Zoom as partners. Was that a hard decision to know that you won't be sharing an office and having as much in-person time? It's funny because I think I'm committing to a life of commuting. I think in general, more stuff is going to be on Zoom, but I'm planning to drive to your house a lot is really what I'm planning.
Yeah. And I think we just realized that things tend to work out. So we talked about it, but probably only for like 5 to 7 minutes. You know what I mean? It was just like, well, you're like, I guess I'll drive a lot. And I was like, well, you can probably be on Zoom on Fridays. And I love Ojai. So I'll be willing to drive to Ojai. And we were just like, it'll work out. I mean, we just didn't take it that seriously. I mean, one thing is, like, I already don't want to work downtown living in Encino. I've said, like, I won't do a job if it's downtown. And you're now going to be even more with me on that because I'm going to be an
double
hour
not
further away from downtown. So it'll work out. What we've realized over the years is, like, you just have to let everybody do what they want to do and, like, live their life. And, like, that's always the best answer. So I'm really not worried about it at all.
I know. I'm much more worried about where we're going to live than how it's going to work once we get there. And I think, you know, if we were staff writers, I wouldn't be moving to Ojai. There is a different level of... I do expect people to accommodate for us more now than I did when we were staff writers. Now, I don't feel bad saying, you know what, we need to have an office in the Valley, as opposed to, sure, we'll drive to Sony. I'm not driving to Sony. And I wouldn't have driven to Sony if I lived in West Toluca Lake either. So, you know, it's just different.
And as a showrunner, you can say, hey, let's do a Zoom meeting on Monday. Or you can, like, there's things you can control how things go in a way that you obviously can't when you're a staff writer because someone else is in charge. So, you have that ability to manage your own time.
Yeah. And I have to say, honestly, I'm kind of looking forward to driving more. Like, because Violet's school starts at 8 and she can stay there until 5, like, I'll probably have to figure out evening childcare, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
But, like, I want to listen to books on tape. I'm so excited.
And podcasts.
Podcasts and books on tape. I'm just like, it feels like, you know, there will be actual time to do things I enjoy.
I know, Sarah, I'm excited for you to start listening to podcasts because I feel like there's so much we can't talk about because you don't have time to listen to podcasts. So,
yeah,
I'm excited to, you know, bully you into listening to the podcasts I want you to listen to.
It will not take bullying. I cannot wait.
Well, I love this question from Kayla. She asks, I would love to know how/where you write and your setup when you're not at your treadmill desk. Do you actually write while on your treadmill? Do you sit at desks or use laptops and prefer mobility? Do you write in bed? Do you need to have certain things nearby? Not practical like Zoom lipsticks, but more like a particular candle or a certain type of pen. Oh, what a fun question.
Yes. Well, here at the lake, I have a like a wingback chair that also is like secretly a recliner. So I will sit in that to write, or I will sit on my bed. We are, when we're writing together, we actually are writing often on our treadmill desks because we're using the collaborate feature in Final Draft, which I wanted to say has seemed less glitchy lately. Have you noticed, Liz?
Yes, I think they've made improvements.
They might have. So that's me. Liz, what about you?
I almost exclusively write in bed. That is just where I find it easiest to write. So if you and I are writing together, I write in the office. Yeah, either sitting on my couch or at the treadmill desk. But if I'm just writing on my own, 95% of the time I'm in bed. The only thing I have nearby are icebreakers. I like to eat icebreakers while I write. So that's the only thing. That and my phone are the only things I have nearby. I don't have like a candle or anything like that.
No, I have, if I have like my Dr. Bronner's lip balm and either cold brew or Diet Coke, I'm good.
Yes.
And water.
Yes, and I usually have coffee as well. Okay, coming up, we answer the question of how money works for a writing team. But first, this break. Okay, Sarah, Laura asks, how does the money work for a writing team? Do you have to ask for more as a team, or do they see you as one person?
Good question. We split it. We split it in half.
Yep.
And I do think maybe we cost more than some people, although we're women, so we also cost a lot less than other people.
True.
Men. But yeah, they see us as one person. And I think also we're getting better at making sure we get what we deserve.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I think in the past, we've taken much less than we deserve, which really sucks as a writing team. We're less likely to do that now.
Yes, but we do warn people because we get a lot of questions like from people who are thinking about becoming a team. And we do really warn people about it because, I mean, it truly is half the money. And now with
and
such
it's not
short
half the
orders,
work.
No, it's not. Everyone expects you both to work 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But with these short orders, like 10 episodes, 8 episodes, having half the money makes a big difference. So we do really want to caution people to think about it. Now, we absolutely love being in a team. It has worked for us, but it's not something to enter into lightly. And also, you know, we went to high school together. So, I mean, we just have a bond and trust that is just unshakable. So I think, if you know, you just have to really be careful because it's a big commitment.
Yeah. And as we've said, also, you have to have the same level of ambition. When you're splitting the money in half, you have to know that the other person is working as much as you are, which I think we never think twice about.
Yeah.
If you're someone who's going to be tallying that or being like, you know, like when we both took maternity leaves when we had our kids, we both like there have been times when one of us has been working more than the other. But on a daily basis, I think we both feel like we're killing ourselves to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. Like we'll be like, OK, we need to just not work right now. You know, like we tend to be the people who are like telling ourselves and each other, OK, take a break. But if you're someone who's going to be tallying, like I wrote 3 pages and you wrote 4 pages and, you know, like it's not for you.
Yes. And, you know, Sarah, something I wanted to add, there was a question about what we did and how we got our first staff job. Just something else I wanted to add to that on this partner topic is that you and I sort of took advantage of being 2 women. We really started at a time when there were very few women.
Yeah.
People could get credit for hiring 2 women when they hired us as a team instead of just 1. And so that made us a more appealing hire. Thank goodness now I don't think that's such an issue.
Yeah.
But I do think it helped us at the start of our career that people got 2 for the price of 1.
Absolutely. I think it's not even debatable. Definitely helped. Oh, Liz, this is funny. Mary Therese says, one of the things I like best about the show is your Midwestern accents and sensibilities. Maybe a discussion of how you have maintained your Midwesternness and how it has affected your careers.
Well, of course, I don't think of us as having accents, so that's funny.
I know.
Our Midwesternness, I think, has both helped us and hurt us. Yeah, there are a lot of Midwesterners, by the way, in LA, because there's a lot of people who move to LA from other places. I think it's helped us just because we have that nose to the grindstone work ethic that helps when you're, you know, we say at the beginning of this podcast that Hollywood is a war of attrition. And it really is. It's like, just can you keep moving forward? And if you, you know, and if you don't fall out, then probably eventually you'll make a career for yourself. And I think that has been an advantage. And I think people feel like we're kind of open and trustworthy, which is, you know, an advantage because we are. But I think we've talked about the disadvantage of having integrity.
Which sadly is a true disadvantage. I mean, we have been so screwed over at times in our career because people knew they could take advantage.
I call us sitting ducks, basically. Yeah. Anybody who wants to screw us over can, because we won't counteract in a sneaky way.
Yeah.
We just go there.
Yeah. We're too direct. We're too honest. Damn it.
I know. And we have had many conversations about changing that and sort of trying to, I mean, really be devious or, you know, fight back or do these things. And it's just not who we are. We can't pull that off. So we just have to go the other direction and hope it works out. And it hasn't always worked out. I mean, more than once.
No, it's resulted in us leaving jobs because we were just like, we're not going to engage in this kind of behavior.
Yeah. Well, and people getting rid of us. But at the end of the day, we have to be able to live with ourselves, and that's who we are. And it's not going to change.
Sadly, I don't know, or for the better. This is something we will assess when we are in our retirement. We'll look back,
yes,
having drinks at the Ojai Valley Inn and go, should we have fucked that person back?
Yeah, exactly. Lisa says, this might be ridiculous, but as a non-writer, why does the writing team go on location? Is that so they can do on-the-spot rewrites? That is a good question.
It is a good question. And right now I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why we go. I don't want to go back to Puerto Rico right now. It's so hot.
I know. It's so beautiful, but it is very hot. Well, in television, writers are also the showrunners. So we are involved in all aspects of production. So it makes sense for us to be there because we can meet with directors in person. We can meet with the costume designer. We can meet with the production designer. We can actually be on set and give notes to the director as she's shooting. So it is actually very helpful to have us there. And yes, we can also do on-the-spot rewrites if something's not working. Or, for instance, in Puerto Rico, we have an issue of rain. Like, we set a lot of the show outside. There may be a storm, and suddenly you have to rewrite something for inside, for instance. So there's a lot of reasons why it's helpful to everyone to have us there.
And it's not just us as the showrunners. We also, you know, all writers at a certain level are producers. So having any writer on set functioning in that producerial role can be really helpful. Adria, who's our number
super
two
helpful
on the show, she was in Puerto Rico for 5 weeks. She left and then she came back for another month just to kind of be there and say, okay, these are the issues that production is having. How can we help adjust? What can we move? Can we change something from day to night? All of these sort of producing related jobs are also things that writers do in TV.
Yes. So when we came back to LA, basically Adria went there and covered, and now we're going back. Listeners, thank you for all these great questions, and thank you for the interest in Fantasy Island. I can't wait for everyone to see it on Fox August 10th.
And that is it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. We love to hear from you. Email us or send us a voice memo to happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe if you haven't already.
Thanks to our executive producer, the amazing Chuck Reed. Thanks to everyone at Sankola Sound. You can follow them on Instagram at Sankola Sound. Thanks to everyone at Cadence 13.
And as always, thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project. Check out the other Onward Project podcasts, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, Side Hustle School, and Do the Thing from Whole30's Melissa Urban. And check out the newest Onward Project podcast, Everything Happens with Kate Bowler.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram at Liz Craft and Sarah is at S Fain. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join the conversation.
Until next week, I'm Sarah Fain.
And I'm Liz Craft. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it.
Sarah, should we do this one last question? Has Sarah made Dole Whips yet?
Yeah, except was I going to make Dole Whips?
I don't know.
I remember you said you were. Vaguely about Dole Whips.
I'm guessing you haven't made them yet, if that's
no,
your answer.
No, I haven't. But I like
Meanwhile,
it as a plan.
How good does a Dole Whip sound?
Oh my God, so good.
From the Onward Project.